Hello, everybody, and welcome to the fifth episode of Retail Ramblings. We're going to continue on and start looking at the state of retail today. However, to begin with, we're going to review our last episode. So I'll begin with having a very quick look at the winners and losers, and I'll start on the home improvement side. So we had Clorox as our big winner for having the highest ranked CEO according to Glassdoor. And our loser was any brand that isn't manufactured in North America. And we based that on a report that we found that outlined consumer preferences were prioritizing North American made products, particularly in the home improvement space. Marsha, who do we have on the cosmetic side?
So on the cosmetic side, we have NARS Cosmetics as our loser for last week. They came under some scrutiny for doing testing on animals, and consumers weren't too happy to find out about that. And it was really reflected in their sales and their shares. On the winner side of things, we had e.l.f. Cosmetics. They have been doing incredibly well over the last couple of years. They've been listed in several new stores, and they also launched a really great new line of products called Beauty Shield that's also been doing fantastically well.
Yeah, brilliant. For the retail roadmap, we had a look at the death of brick and mortar stores, but we didn't take the conventional approach and say, yes, it's an imminent in terms of the death of brick and mortar stores, but rather the other side and looked at online-only brands who had expanded out to brick and mortar and the importance of a really optimized omni-channel strategy in making sure that you continue to expand.
And on the data dive side of things, we took a look at a platform called Volition, which brings a democracy to decision-making for big retailers. And we also talked about their partnership with Sephora to help consumers pick the types of products that they would like to see in this beauty giant and make them actually come to life through this platform.
Yeah, brilliant. Let's get into the winners and losers for this particular episode. As always, we're going to start this week having a look at the home improvement winners and losers. And our big winner for this week is Compact Power Equipment Incorporated. Now, you may never have heard of them, but they've actually been purchased or acquired by Home Depot recently for $265 million. So a little bit of background on who Compact Power Equipment are. They're a rental and maintenance service who offer products for either the DIY or pro consumer for one-off projects or one-off jobs. They started in 2009 and they originally started in 3 Home Depot stores but have expanded to over 1,000 Home Depot stores. So they've clearly had a massive growth trajectory and continue to grow on the back of pro consumers and DIY consumers really looking to rent equipment that they're only using for those one-off jobs. Now, the reasons why they're a winner is fairly obvious. They're getting more cash, more investment. They're able to tap into the Home Depot's almost endless amount of resources. But the reason that I wanted to bring this one up, Marsha, is the kind of the greater discussion around what the Home Depot is doing. So we've discussed in length, and if you haven't listened to our previous episodes, I highly recommend that you do, about the Home Depot strategy, particularly targeting pro consumers. And I think this is indicative of that approach. This is indicative of the Home Depot continuing to go hard after Lowe's, who are also looking to try and target that particular consumer. And it's also indicative of the Home Depot trying to improve their customer experience and customer success and ensure that they're not simply seen as a retailer, but a partner in the relationship, particularly with pro consumers.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I'll be really curious to see over the coming months what Lowe's does in response to this. It's so interesting to watch those two retailers compete. They're always iterating on their strategies and doing kind of similar things sometimes.
Yeah, it's really ferocious at the moment, isn't it? You kind of see when Lowe's does something, the Home Depot answers, and when the Home Depot does something, Lowe's answers.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we see it a lot on the innovation side of things, again, alluding to some of our previous episodes. So again, if you haven't listened to them, please do. But I know innovation is a really, really big area for Lowe's, and it kind of feels like the Home Depot's gone a little bit quiet on that front, and maybe we'll see something come out of there. But again, Compact Power Equipment for being acquired by Home Depot is the winner. Marsha, who do we have as the loser for this particular week in the home improvement space?
So for the loser, we actually have a really interesting scenario here. So we have Sears and Kenmore Appliances. So as some of you may know, Kenmore Appliances is a private brand that's specifically sold in Sears. And what's happened recently is that Sears has decided to actually sell Kenmore appliances through Amazon and to partner with them to do that. So this might actually sound like a great idea. And actually, when this was announced, shares for both Sears and for Kenmore have actually gone up, and there's been a great response to it. And the shares of the Home Depot, Lowe's, and other appliance retailers actually fell. So it did seem like it was a really strong partnership. But I will explain why I think this actually makes them a loser. So just to take it a step back, here's how the deal will work. So under the terms of the deal, Sears will sell Kenmore, Kenmore Pro, and Kenmore Elite refrigerators. They'll also sell Alexa-enabled ACs and other smart appliances direct to Amazon. And Amazon is going to own that inventory, but they're going to lean on Sears in-house home services unit and Innovel Solutions for delivery, installation, and extended service support. So ultimately, what the experts are saying about this deal is that it is a step in the right direction, but it might just be a little bit too late. And this could almost prove to be kind of like a stopgap measure as Sears is windling its way toward bankruptcy. So here's one of the quotes that one of the experts in this article said. So they said, "Let's not dance around it. Sears Holdings Corp is an utter disaster despite its new appliance deal with Amazon. And just because Kenmore is available on Amazon doesn't mean that customers are going to want this dying brand any more than they do now." Ouch. I mean,
it's pretty tough, strong words.
It's really tough. And ultimately, I mean, what the experts are saying is that Sears actually still needs something around $2 billion of liquidity annually to be able to survive as a company. So even with this partnership, yes, this could give them a boost. But on the other side of things, it could even jeopardize their own sales. So say people are buying Kenmore appliances online now through Amazon, it doesn't give them a reason to go in store to the Sears and to buy anything else in that retailer. So they're almost cannibalizing their own sales with this partnership. So as I said, I think this makes them a loser for the week, but I am really curious to watch this going forward and see how this works out.
Yeah, and you talk about the cannibalization, and I guess that was always the traditional model of the department stores, wasn't it? It was to get people into the store and hope that they continue to purchase other products besides the initial intention of what they were going to purchase.
Exactly.
So it'll be really interesting to see. I feel like we're constantly talking about Sears and Macy's and Bloomingdale's and their imminent death. And I guess this is kind of just keeping them on CPR, I guess, or keeping them on life support for a little while longer. But, you know, maybe we're doing retail rambling next year and we're no longer talking about Sears as a company that exists, but as a dead company.
We'll see.
So we've jumped through our home improvement winners and losers for the week. Let's go over to the cosmetics, health and beauty side of things. So the big winner that I have, and this is quite a big one, is CoverGirl. So CoverGirl was actually acknowledged as having the most loyal customer base out of all cosmetics brands based on a survey done by Cora.com, who are a digital commerce agency. Now, the survey outlined that nearly half of the respondents had been using CoverGirl products for 5 or more years. If you're unfamiliar with CoverGirl, CoverGirl is, or they specialize in blush, foundation, powder, and concealer. And they play in the drug and pharma space. So ever since I read this news, I've been extremely cognizant of it and looking in, you know, the different drug and pharma stores in our area and or in my area and really noticing that CoverGirl's just about everywhere. A bit of background on who they are as well. They're a Coty-owned brand. So they're not their own organization. And in terms of why they're the winner, there's a few different reasons. So for CoverGirl, this is a massive win considering that it's common knowledge that look, the number varies, but it's somewhere around 7 times more expensive to get a new customer than maintain a loyal one. So on that particular point, it's a massive win for CoverGirl. Further than that, cult followings are huge in the cosmetic space, and we all know that. We know that Instagram advocates and bloggers are a massive, massive win for any particular cosmetics brand. And this study is indicative of how loyal the CoverGirl users are. From there, the survey actually threw out some other really interesting numbers. So of all the respondents surveyed, 69.3% of people would recommend a brand that they're loyal to. From that same pool of respondents, 12% would actually leave brand reviews. And amazingly, of all the respondents, 6.7% would actually post on social. Now, The reason that this is so important, Marcia, is in an independent study, I dug around and did a little bit more research on the importance of loyalty. There are certain studies to say that 93% of purchases made in the cosmetic space is actually an influence purchase. So it might be from a friend, a family, a colleague, or we know how important bloggers are. We know how important Instagrammers are. We know how important social media is for the cosmetics industry. Having a look at the study in wider detail, and you can find it included on the show notes, the premium brands in general performed really, really poorly. So Yves Saint Laurent and Chanel were two that were pointed out as not having extremely loyal customers. And I guess this comes down from an affordability perspective, right? I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Marcia, it's kind of a one-off purchase that you may make, like make an Yves Saint Laurent purchase.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's what I found personally. If I buy something from that brand, that's usually one, maybe two things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, where CoverGirl has been really successful, is they have a huge, huge share of wallet. And that's something that really, really separates them from the crowd.
Yeah, I agree with that. Just a quick question for you. So in that 93% of purchases influenced, does that bring into mind the consumer reviews as well on their website and on different retailer websites, or is that a separate number?
No, that definitely does. So this kind of encompasses everything, that any sort of auxiliary information that a consumer will get before they make a purchase. So it does encompass that. And again, it just shows the importance of making sure you have a holistic omnichannel strategy, right? Making sure that all your different touch points are perfectly on point. So your online strategy, so your consumer reviews, your social media is all consistent, and making sure that everything funnels back to sales.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
So Marcia, who do we have as the loser?
So for the loser this week on the cosmetic side of things, we have Revlon, which is really interesting considering that they are kind of at a similar price point as CoverGirl, and they do play in the same category and have a lot of similar products.
Do we have Revlon as a winner not too long ago? I've got a memory like a goldfish. So
I feel like we did. They might have done something right. But this week, we've seen some pretty negative news about them. So Revlon has announced its results for the second quarter of the financial year, and they don't look too good, Chris. So their net sales were down 3.9%. Their adjusted EBITDA also fell really sharply, decreasing by 32.7%. And the beauty company is saying that this is driven by net sales declines in North America. They're also saying that the reason for these negative results are overall the decline in mall and department store traffic. So when I read something like that, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to cut you off and say, isn't that an excuse that every brand kind of uses at the moment?
That's exactly what I was going to say. So you know what? I mean, at this point in time, with everything that's going on in the cosmetic space and just how we were talking about the importance of influencers and all these things that you could be doing online, they can't. I mean, there's no reason to be using this as an excuse. And it's really like they should be doing more to innovate and to figure out different partnerships and different ways that they could draw people in store or to purchase online with influencers.
Definitely.
So there are some good news here. So I was able to find a quote from Revlon's president and their CEO, Fabian Garcia. So they said that while our financial performance and sales results in the U.S. remain soft in a challenging retail environment, we are encouraged by the global growth of our iconic Revlon and Elizabeth Arden brands. Our international sales, which remain robust, and the key strategic initiatives that we have implemented during this quarter, which we expect will drive sequential improvements in company performance. So, I mean, that does sound somewhat hopeful, and I am curious to see what they're doing internationally, with them saying that their sales internationally are remaining robust. And it seems like they have some interesting strategic initiatives coming up. So we'll see if they could turn it around. But for this week, they're definitely a loser. And it's really disappointing to see them using this kind of excuse to justify it. So next up, we're going to jump into the retail roadmap. And here is where we're going to focus on one area where retail is moving in the future. So this week, I wanted to talk about change rooms in different stores. And it's really interesting what's happening with that area. It's really becoming a place where data is being collected and used in some really exciting ways. So you might think that when you're shopping and you're trying something on in a store, the change room is kind of a sacred place and you have some privacy there. Well, not anymore, Chris. Data is collected about you even in change rooms now. Yeah. So Let me explain how this is happening. So retailers are using data and technology to interact with customers when they're in these change rooms. So before, when you think of a change room, you might be thinking of kind of like a poorly lit mirrored closet. It's, you know, it's tiny and you're just kind of in and out of there to try on your clothes. Now some retailers are doing some really exciting things. So two examples are Rebecca Minkoff and Ralph Lauren. So Rebecca Minkoff, they've installed something called smart mirrors in their change rooms, which basically when you go in there, it almost tracks which items you're bringing in there. It could see what you're trying on and what you're leaving behind. And that also makes suggestions. So say you're trying on a top in the color white. It will also show you all the other colors that it comes in, other sizes, and you can tap on that smart mirror and the sales associate will bring you a different style or a different color as you request it through there. And the data that's coming through from there is just incredible. So it's showing the trends of what items are popular with consumers, which items aren't converting. You know, somebody brings it into the change room, but they're seeing that very few people are actually buying it. And that indicates to the retailer which kind of items should be placed up front, which items should potentially be discontinued, which ones need to be promoted. I mean, I think there's just such a wealth of information there. Something else that's really interesting is the online athleisure brand Fabletics, which we also spoke about in a previous episode. So previously they were just online, they operated as a membership model. Now they've actually expanded to brick and mortar, and they're also using this kind of information through their change rooms. And what's super interesting about them is that they're now taking that information from in-store and they're bringing it online and into their whole omni-channel experience and just continuing to iterate on that. So somebody that's a member of their online community and a member of their online shop, they can now track that person if they sign in when they walk into a brick and mortar store. And they could see that full cycle, what kind of items they look on online, if they're going to try any of that in person in the store, and what actually converts either online or in store. I mean, I think that's so interesting. Something else that I want to mention is that, you know what, retailers aren't tech organizations at the end of the day. Amazon has 18 years of data profiling and reacting on it. But what these brick and mortar stores are doing, they're moving forward. So even as a traditional retailer, they're just beginning to figure out how that data fits into fitting rooms. But I think they're doing an amazing job so far, and it's really futuristic if you see one of those smart mirrors. And I mean, I do think it's scalable. So brands and retailers just need to position themselves to be able to pivot on a daily basis in reaction to the data that they're collecting.
Marsha, do you know much about RFID technology? Because what comes to mind, this is going to be extremely important in the fashion and apparel space. But do you see any other implications in any other industries?
So I know with this, it's exactly what I was mentioning about the smart mirrors. So they're using RFID tags, which instantly recognizes which items are being brought in and so forth. I do see this applied in other industries as well. I think this could work really well, for example, in a toy store, across consumer packaged goods potentially as well. Really like anything that's a physical item in a store. I mean, it could be tracked with the customer putting it in their cart and seeing how long they, like if it actually converts at checkout or if it's just something that they're considering and maybe they leave it behind.
Yeah, it's really telling, and we kind of go into detail a little bit more in the data dive that I'll speak about next, but the amount of data that's becoming available to brands and how, and now it's no longer, I remember maybe say 5 years ago, it was about collecting the data and collating the data and putting it all in one spot. Now it's about actually making actionable decisions based on that data. And we're starting to see that occur with organizations like, I guess, Ralph Lauren, and I think it was Rebecca Minkoff that you mentioned before as well, who are starting to accrue all this data and starting to make strategic and tactical decisions about how to use this data and how to offer a better, more holistic service.
For sure. Yeah, they're chasing behind Amazon, and I think they're doing a good job.
All right, so we're into our final section for this particular episode, which is our data dive. And this week's focus will be on San Diego-based company Cloverleaf and their ShelfPoint technology. So Marsha, I don't know, have you ever heard of Shelf Point before?
I haven't, no.
Okay, so what Shelf Point is think of your traditional store shelf. So think of your traditional grocery store. You have a look at your product, and below where your product is shelved, you'll see the price. And the price is on the, it's basically on the store shelf face. So what Shelf Point does is it digitizes the shelf face. And how it does this is what they offer is LCD screens with little cameras set up there. And what they do is these cameras actually react to facial movement, age, ethnicity, the amount of time you're standing at a particular shelf to put out targeted messages on the shelf face. So basically think of it like advertising at the Shelf Point. And it's really interesting because it uses AI to make judgments on consumer feeling. So I think from memory reading about Shelf Point from their own website, they can pick up about 40 different facial movements. So it might be somebody grimacing, it might be somebody smiling, it might be a look of surprise, and then subsequently use this to send out targeted advertising. So the reason I wanted to bring this up is there's a few different areas where this is going to be really important, and it kind of falls into three buckets. So marketing and sales, it's going to have an enormous influence over. Retail in general, which is kind of an obvious one, and CPG in particular. So with marketing and sales, the implications are enormous. With having this sort of data available, and we've just alluded to it in our previous section, it gives marketers the ability to change their promotional strategy and change their tactics on the fly. So having the ability to access in-store data, they'll see if a product is resonating with customers, if it's not resonating with customers, the general sentiment around a particular promotional campaign or a particular product, and they can use this to test the overall effectiveness. Further from that, you can change on the fly, right? So you can actually change what type of advertising you're sending out to the consumer based on that type of feedback you're receiving back from the store. It allows marketers to A/B test on both advertising and planograms, and it basically allows them to optimize their promotional strategy to a degree that was never previously available without data. So if we jump into retail in general, I feel like everywhere's innovating, right? You just mentioned the change room, you know, we've talked about in previous episodes, VR and AI, but the shelf is kind of, it's kind of an inconspicuous area, something where we haven't necessarily innovated enormously since this advent of digital technology. So it's definitely a space ripe for change. And I guess further from that, for retail, the consumer influence is enormous as well. So consumers are more likely, and this is again coming from Shelf Point's own PR, so I don't know how much you want to believe it, but consumers are more likely to believe prices that are in real time and that are digitized as opposed to shelf prices that are just being put there on a piece of paper, a strip of cardboard or something like that. So again, yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, and I guess that's the integrity of the price is a lot more, is a lot higher when it's actually digital. As well as that, we've obviously talked about this in the past again, but retailers are becoming more in tandem with brands and working with data together. And brands are always looking for new ways to cut through the clutter, and this is going to give them another opportunity to do that. If we look at CPG in particular, CPG is an enormously competitive space, and they're very reliant, CPG brands are very reliant on end caps and promotions, and the lack of loyalty means that you need to do something to stand out from the crowd. And this is another opportunity for brands to do that. Nimbleness is necessary as well within that particular industry. And having this type of technology allows brands to be nimble and make changes on the fly, which we mentioned previously.
I think this is so fantastic. I mean, I think it was in our first episode, we talked about brand or retailers using big data to target consumers. And, you know, in the last like 5 or 6 years, there's been a lot of missteps with it, where it felt almost like they were infringing on the consumer's privacy. I think with this, it's a really nice way where it is bringing value to the consumer, but it's not doing it in a way that's interfering with their shopping or coming into their personal space in any way. So I think this has an amazing future, and I'm really excited to follow this.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, right? This is all designed to make life easier for the consumer and help the consumer make decisions that are going to benefit them in the long run. So it's really, really interesting to see. The data dive for us is interesting every week because we find out all these great innovations in the retail space. And I think this technology from Cloverleaf is another example of an organization that's really pushing the status quo in retail at the moment. So we have come to the end of another episode or another podcast for this particular week. Just want to review everything we've touched on today. So as our winner, we went through and had Compact Power Equipment on the home improvement side and Sears and Kenmore as the loser. On our cosmetics side, we had CoverGirl as the big winner and Revlon as the loser. Our retail roadmap, Marsha went through and explained data in change rooms and how that's being revolutionized. And then finally, the data dive, we talked about San Diego brand Cloverleaf and their shelf point technology. So that brings us to the end, as I mentioned before. At the end of this podcast, we'd absolutely love it if you could leave us a review. It helps us make our podcast better, and feedback always helps us improve so we can give you the kind of content that you want. So jump on iTunes, jump on Google Play, jump on wherever else we're posted through. I can't even remember, but get on there. And leave us a review and help us get better.